As we've taken through this series of lessons about choosing the hills on which we will die for the Lord, the different aspects of what we looked at have brought us to today. And so many of these lessons, as they come together, have already been put in place, sometimes even weeks before they get to be taught. And I want you, if you will, open up to Matthew chapter 12, verse 33. We're going to start there in a few moments. And if you're in the Pew Bible, page 970. When you think about the title that you heard about careless with fire, you probably wouldn't let someone in your home that was careless with fire, because you treasure what the Lord has provided for you in a roof over your head, in the family that you love that's there. And to understand when people come in and don't see the destructive power that fire can have, it makes us want to steer clear of such type situations. In James chapter 3, James describes the tongue, and he says the tongue is a fire. And he even makes a statement to say, see how great of a forest that just a spark can set ablaze. I don't know if we realize it. I think we may know it intellectually, but the application of it is what I really want to dwell on this morning with these words of Jesus. To think in terms of, are we so careless with the words that we say toward our mate, toward our children or our parents, toward coworkers, toward enemies, toward people that we just encounter, but realizing that words do truly matter. And I think you'll see that come through ever so clearly as we read through these verses. To hear things that I know of specifically in terms of a woman who was married 5 times and yet divorced 5 times. And she spoke of one argument that she had with her husband. And her husband told her that you were more fun whenever you were a drunk. And she said, you were far more good looking when I was too. And you realize sparks start to fly. And to realize they were not in Christ. But to see, that's how easy it is to start throwing words around. To be cutting and cunning, all those things together. And sometimes even we as God's people can forget about what the tongue is capable of. And all of a sudden we become really careless with the way that we interact with each other. And the words that we choose to use and how we choose to say them. I want you to notice, in terms of speaking about the tongue as a fire, yet at the same time, when fire is under control, it can be so helpful. To think about some of these humongous trains that traveled the nation 100 years ago, worked off of steam, all by the power of fire. When it's harnessed, it can be used in a great way. You think about to gather around a campfire. You can cook food. You can enjoy the warmth in a cold night. You can share in the light together. But at the same time, if that fire gets out of control and the lighter fluid is left too close and the tree branches lean over that fire, you can set the whole woods on fire. All a matter of whether the fire is under control or not. Now, thinking about these things, I want you to notice these verses in Matthew chapter 12. Look at verse 33. Jesus says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. The words that we use make the fruit very evident of what's going on the inside of the tree. What you find out is the fruit, we know this agriculturally, the fruit that hangs on the branches is a direct reflection of the health of the tree on the inside. And you realize that even on the inside of trees, they still call that a heart. And so you start to look at this picture and this image, and you think, look at what's going on here. He says, either the fruit is good and the tree is good. He says, or the tree is bad and the fruit is bad. He says, there's always consistency through and through. And then he finishes up with it, for the tree is known by its fruit. You think in terms of you're traveling along, you have a young child with you, preschool maybe age, and you're going along and all of a sudden you're getting out to these places that are a little bit more more isolated, you don't have a cell signal, and all of a sudden the car stops. And it won't start up anymore, it won't run, and you realize, what do I do now? There's no one who lives here. It says, I can't walk somewhere, the cell phone doesn't work. And about that time, that young child smiles and says, you know, Mom, Dad, I prayed that I'd get more time with you. What's in your heart will decide how you answer that statement. We get frustrated. We turn unkind. We get self-centered. Or we're going to be the good tree and turn in times to go, you know what? We do get to share this time together. Let's use it in a beneficial way while we wait. Worry will do us no good. And you realize words have a direct reflection of what's going on inside of the heart. Now, you see this picture at hand here. Look at verse 34 and listen to the straightforwardness of Jesus. You brood of vipers. How can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. He says, you brood of vipers. Whoa. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? He says, you're the offspring of venomous snakes. You go, wow. And then he makes a statement, directly working off of what he's just talked about in verse 33. And he says, how can you, being evil? He says, your tree is evil. How can you, being evil, speak what is good? You can't have the heart of the tree be evil and have the fruit be good. The words that we say. And then he goes on to explain it even more. He says, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. He says, the words that come out, do you realize that is who we are? We can't be a people who claim, well, that wasn't really me. Yes, it is. It is really us. It tells us there's some things in the heart that need to be addressed. There's some things that need to change. If we find ourselves getting frustrated in the moment and all of a sudden just come these outbursts of statements and words that we later on go, oh, I shouldn't be saying those kind of things. Look at what Jesus is saying. And I want you to look at what he brings out specifically. He says, you brood of vipers. What's in the mouth of a viper? You might be thinking about fangs. You might be thinking about venom and poison. Hold your place here in Matthew chapter 12. We're going to come right back. Look over at Romans chapter 3, page 1127 in the Pew Bible. Romans chapter 3. And Paul has just been talking to the saints. He's not talking to outsiders. He's talking to saints. And he's talking to Jews and he's talking to Gentiles. All together. And I want you to notice some of this language that he uses as he quotes out of the Old Testament. Romans chapter 3, look down at verses 11 and 12. He says, there is none who understands. There is none who seeks for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become useless. There is none who does good. There is not even one. Now, he's talking about them in their former lives, but now he's addressing something that's still ongoing. What does it look like whenever God's own people, the saints, no longer truly seek God and they have become useless to God? What does that look like? I want you to think about what kind of picture of character do you get in your head whenever you think about those who are in Christ, but no longer seek God and are useless to what God is striving to do. Look at the next two verses. Verse 13. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongues they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips. That's what someone sounds like when they no longer seek God and they're useless according to doing what is righteous. Now digest what he's saying here. Their throat is an open grave. If you were to go to an open grave where someone has been buried, what would you expect to find? Life or death? You find death, don't you? You'd be foolish to think you'd find anything else. He says, whenever they no longer seek God as my people, when they no longer are useful to God in terms of what their life is doing for his cause, he says, their throat is an open grave. With their tongues, they keep deceiving. Look at what is part of going on inside of this heart. They look to deceive people. They won't be genuine and honest. They're going to be deceptive. They'll paint over their tracks. They'll try to. And then notice the very next statement, which ties directly into you brood of vipers in Matthew 12. He says, the poison of asps is under their lips. Whenever the asp or the viper bites, what is their intention? It is always to do harm. It is even to bring about death. He says, that's what's under their lips, is the poison of asps. Now, look at what else is stirring within the heart of these things. Verse 14, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. When bitterness is in the heart, when cursing is in the heart, he says, even in terms of what he's mentioned before, deception is in the heart. How does a tree look? And what are the words going to be coming out? He says, what's inside of your mouth? Are we careless with fire? And realize that the application that's being talked about here by Jesus and here by Paul is an application in terms of no matter how you communicate, whether you communicate orally, maybe it's in a phone call. Maybe it's in a written email. Maybe it's in a letter. Maybe it's even somewhere that you write it digitally on social media. He says, if this is what's going on inside of you, let's give ourselves a little bit of help here. If you're really bitter about a situation and all of a sudden you're going to get online on an online format and write things that are bitter, that are deceptive because they don't hold to the whole truth, and because they're even going to go after cursing others. And I'm not just talking about curse language. Wanting their demise. You tell me how your tree is doing. Because an evil tree doesn't give out what's good. And a good tree doesn't give out what's evil. Don't be careless with fire. Now, turn back to Matthew chapter 12, page 970. You see how these things are. Even James chapter 3 talks about that our tongue, he says it's a restless evil and it's full of deadly poison. So realize, we have these capabilities. We better make sure that this fire is under control. Now, in Matthew chapter 12, when he makes this statement, he says, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. To go, what is going on inside of these hearts of ours? And notice the next words, verse 35. He says, the good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of the evil treasure what is evil. Now, this word for treasure is where we would think of a word like a storehouse or a warehouse. He says, the good man goes to his storehouse and he's going to bring out what's good to share with those people who he encounters. the bad or the evil man is going to go to his treasure, his storehouse, and he's going to pull out those things like bitterness and jealousy and deceit. He says, cursing, they're going to bring these things out of their storehouse, and that's what they're going to put forward. The good man says, I've got things like kindness and patience and love. Storehouses is what we're doing all the time. Whatever you store up in your heart is what you're putting in your storehouse. You let bitterness stay around, it'll be there, and then you'll start to speak it. You let kindness be stored up in your house, and all of a sudden, in the midst of a very frustrating moment, you go, you know what? I've got it stored up right here. I've been thinking about situations like this, and I have kindness to share with you. What are you storing up in your storehouse? Is it flammables? Or is it things that put out fires? A gentle answer turns away wrath. What's in your storehouse? Now, here he speaks of these things. I want you to think about the book of Job. I want you to think about Job's situation. He's blameless, upright, fearing God, turning away from evil. He stores that up in his storehouse. And whenever he goes through great suffering, you know what two things he doesn't do? He doesn't sin and he doesn't blame God. Even though he's lost 10 children in one day, he's lost a multitude of servants in one day, and he's lost a lot of things that don't really matter, but he lost those too. At the same time, his wife has also lost 10 children. His wife has also lost a bunch of servants, has also lost all these physical things. And when Job continues to walk in a way that's blameless and upright, his wife says to him, curse God and die. What's she been storing up in her storehouse? And yet, here's what Job has. He says, how can we accept the good from God and not the adversity? See, what you're storing up in your storehouse is what you're storing in your hearts. And whenever the moments come, it's only going to bring out words that reflect exactly what's in your storehouse. Now, notice how he continues on. Look at verse 36. He says, but I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for in the day of judgment. That's what Jesus said. Do you take that serious? Does that matter to us? Or can we just be careless with fire? Just store up all the propane and the gasoline that you got so that whenever you need it, you can just burn it down. Or do you go, no, I got water. I got soft, gentle answers. And yet to realize, here's Jesus talking to people he calls a brood of vipers. Yet how is he doing it and with what motive and intent? I want to see your transformation. But you have to recognize where you are to start. And sometimes being honest like that is really going to make us, we're going to have to utilize some humility to see our failures. Sometimes even seeing those failures in terms of, here's a quotation out of Proverbs 26. It says, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, was I not joking? Here's a madman who's just throwing firebrands around, and they're red hot. And all of a sudden, it sears one of his neighbors that he's deceiving. He says, oh, just a joke. Just kidding. Boy, aren't those the words that finish a lot of statements that are really said out of a bitter heart? I'm storing up jealousy. I'm storing up bitterness. And all of a sudden, like a madman, I'm going to start to throw these firebrands and these arrows around. And then whenever they land right where I want them to, then go, oh, just joking. Just joking. See, the heart of the tree is bad. Fruit's bad. Nothing good in the storehouse. Nothing good on the outcome. Notice here, he says, I tell you that every careless or idle word that people speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. What are you going to say when all these careless words get brought before you standing in judgment? How will you defend yourself? Well, do you know how I was treated? We'll deal with that one in a minute. You know what I've been through? Now, you notice it here. He says, I'm telling you. And then notice he's going to give you the two outcomes. Verse 37. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. What's in your storehouses really matters. What's in your heart? He says, because you're either going to be justified or condemned. Why did you so show such kindness to wicked and evil people? Because God, that's the kindness you showed me. Why did you show such bitterness? Why did you show such animosity toward people? Because that's how they treated me. Storehouses look a whole lot different, don't they? Now, you see this picture. And notice what Jesus is saying. Every careless word. Or are we just out here careless with fire? Because it will set our life ablaze. Husbands and wives. You ever get frustrated with each other? What's in your storehouse? What's in your treasure? Because it'll come out. Parents with children, same thing. Parents ready to show grace to their children whenever they're humble, or they just want to torch them and tongue lash them. We need to be thinking about what we're doing. I want to show you a situation. Look over at James chapter 5, page 1210. James chapter 5. The situation at hand is among saints. There were landowners who hired out other saints to come and work for them to harvest their fields. They came out, they did the work. The one who owns the fields has made his money off of the harvest, but has not paid the laborers. Imagine working together and worshiping together with people who are like that. Here you are, you've been taken advantage of. Your family does not have the money, even though you labored, they did not pay. And now you come together to worship God, and they talk about how much they love the Lord. Something's not right about this tree. Then, notice the outcome, verse 8. James 5:8. You too be patient. Strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. What does God expect from us whenever we've been taken advantage of, even among our own brethren? Be patient. Be long-suffering. You know what one of the two building blocks of love is? Love is patient. Love is kind. How are you going to talk to them? When you see them, what words will you have for them? There'll be words of patience, and there'll be words of kindness. Not going to step up to them when you see them and shake their hand and go, you hypocrite. You might want to say that. And I want to show you why. Look at the very next verse. He says at the end of verse 8, for the coming of the Lord is near. He's not talking about the second coming. He's talking about there's a judgment. There's a judgment that God is going to render when you start taking advantage of your own brothers and sisters in Christ. Especially here, verse 9. He's already said, you too be patient. Verse 9. what should you not have in your heart? He says, do not complain. Isn't that what we naturally want to do? Doesn't that get stored up? He says, do not complain, brethren, against one another. And he gives you the reason why. I'm not to go around and tell everybody else about how this person took advantage of me. And, you know, we worked hard. It was pretty hot when we did it. And yet they've already turned in the harvest. They've got their money, but they haven't taken care of us who labored and worked. You don't go around and complain to everybody. And here's why. He says, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Because now not only will God have to deal with them, now he'll also have to bring about a judgment on you. And this is not talking about the end of the life judgment. This is a present. God will intervene. But God needs his people to be a patient, kind people. He needs them to watch how God will provide for them even when someone else has neglected their responsibilities. Otherwise, judgment comes down on both sides. He says, so you be careful with your complaining. Be careful with that fire you're going to carelessly throw around like a firebrand. And then notice how it finishes in verse 9. He says, behold, the judge is standing right at the door. He says, do you realize how near Jesus is to bringing about a judgment? He says, do you want that to affect you too? All of a sudden, now both are guilty. And you realize these statements. How did they come off of things? They came off of careless words. The worker expected to be paid, right? So you look at the application of these things. And I want to show you the complete opposite end of the spectrum away from evil. Here are people who are mistreated. They want to complain. They want to be impatient. But if you're really going to serve the Lord, it has to be out of love. What fills the heart is what will come out of the mouth. Jesus said it. And I want you to realize, is that a hill you're willing to die on? Because Jesus was. I want you to listen to these words of Jesus. Eight statements that Jesus makes as he is dying for you and me. For the sins that we had committed just with our tongue, as well as everything else. But I want you to listen to Jesus. Tell me what's in his heart. Tell me how the storehouse has been laid up. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. He doesn't complain about being mocked. He doesn't complain about injustice. He doesn't complain. He says, Father, forgive them. What does it take for that to happen? What's in the storehouse? Woman, behold your son, and behold your mother. Even as Jesus is dying, who is he considering? He's thinking of his own mother. He's dying at the command of his father to surrender himself voluntarily. But yet here he is still thinking about his mother. And to tell John, the disciple whom he loved specifically, says, take care of my mother. What's in his storehouse? To the thief on one side, he says, truly I say to you today, you shall be with me in paradise. He's thinking about faith being exposed right there beside him. A man who had formerly mocked him at the beginning of this crucifixion. And now he turns to faith. And Jesus doesn't say, where's those words you're saying earlier? He says, there is a place reserved for you before my Father. Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? The Lamb of God understands he has been made to be our sin. Even the sin of careless with fire. He says, I'm thirsty. He has needs. He's lost a lot of blood. And you know what those around him did? They filled a sponge full of sour vinegar and gave it to him. In the midst of thirst, what's in their heart? Evil. Jesus says, it is finished. He says, I've completed my course. You look at the storehouse of what's on the inside. And then he finishes by saying, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. He says, Father, I have given my all. What's in his storehouse? Is love. It is filled to the brim. What is in your storehouse? Your words show it. No matter what your emotions feel in the moment, your words show what's in your storehouse. Don't deceive yourself. James addresses that in James chapter 1 when he says, if a man thinks himself to be religious but doesn't bridle his tongue, says he deceives his own heart. And his religion is worthless. It's worthless to God. If we don't bridle our tongues and we gather together to worship God, do you know what it's good for? Worthless. No value. Jesus says, I was willing to die on a hill so that you could be forgiven. And as part of that transformation that you would bridle your tongue, even when you're wronged, that you would have stored up within your treasure a storehouse of love. Jesus fulfilled the greatest commands. Love God with all your heart. Can you love God with all your heart and not bridle your tongue? Only a deceived heart would say yes. We need to be ever mindful of these things. Otherwise, we will burn down our own houses. We will destroy God's own people. And we will hinder outsiders from wanting to draw near to God. Let's all take on the heart of Jesus. We will fail. Are we not grateful for a God who is willing to forgive? Because that's the God we serve.